Coming up, actress Mary Birdsong joins Ileana in just a minute.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, it's the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast, starring Ileana Douglas. Eavesdrop with Ileana as she interviews Hollywood's most prominent players about filmmaking, acting, and what really happens on the set of your favorite flicks and TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Ileana Douglas. Welcome to the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast. I'm here in the studio with my lovely co-host, Tamara Berg.
Hi, everybody.
Hi there.
Hi.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
We got a great guest coming up, Mary Birdsong. We're going to talk to her in a bit. But yes. What's going on with you?
Doing the holiday thing.
I know, I'm in the
trying
holiday.
To stay away from the carbs, which is like a life choice.
It works for about 2 days. I mean, do you listen to Christmas songs in your car and the radio?
No, I don't really.
What?
I know. I don't. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. It's my favorite time of year.
Do you sing?
Yeah. Rocking around Christmas.
Really? You bring your cigar and whiskey voice with you, do you?
That was always my fantasy to write a Christmas song.
Oh, me too. Let's do it together.
You know what actually would be better is a New Year's Eve song. Because there's only
only two. And then like that pink martini version that's, snappy. But
there needs to be a happier, version of
I think we should come up with something.
Although this year may not be the year for a peppy New Year because we're all
peppy,
so
happy New Year tune.
But I love...
No, act as if, right? Isn't that like, right, forward thinking, and let's see if we can make ourselves be happy.
When I was a little kid, staying with my grandfather, Melvin Douglas, name dropper that I am.
Yes, you are.
He had with him, at one of the cocktail parties, the writer, he was a songwriter, and he had written Frosty the Snowman.
Oh.
Yeah. And he wrote a couple other Christmas songs, too, but Frosty the Snowman really was his bread and butter.
Claim to fame.
Again, that was always like, just one good Christmas song, and you're home free.
You could do it is the thing.
It's in my wheelhouse. That and Goat Farm.
Right.
Why are you laughing? These are genuine dreams I have. I always had fantasized, I would want to, if I gave up show business,
right.
which, I've often been asked to do. No, I'm kidding.
Stop.
But I would that always was a fantasy of, move back to Connecticut and have, make goat ice cream or something.
Didn't you have goats when?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, I've come home.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
You don't have any, you're a wonderful cook. You make jewelry.
I do. I get bored easily, so I have many things that I do. I like to call myself a multi-potentialite because, it makes it sound fancier than it is. I have the dream of moving to some small town outside of Kansas City.
Okay.
And, becoming just absolutely nothing. Having the most boring life ever and not trying to have any ambition of any kind because every day I'm always trying to be so damn ambitious and it's ridiculous.
But you need to be well oiled, well set up?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So that's where the Christmas tune comes in or the New Year's tune comes in. So if I could ride onto that coattail there, then
inventing
maybe.
Something?
Yes. I do. I did come up with an invention just the other day that I need to discuss with some people. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll let you know about that one. I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
Because this is true for Mary as well, who's going to be on in a bit.
Yes.
But you have worked, as many actors have, on both the stage and the screen, big screen and small screen.
Yes.
So can you talk about the differences between the media? Are there differences?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I started out as a kid doing musical theater.
Right.
And worked in a dinner theater. I never made it to the stage, but I was...
Say you worked in a dinner theater, can't you?
I worked in a dinner theater. All right. I never made it actually on the stage, but I saw a lot of plays. And then I did do musical theater at the Hartford Stage Company Youth Theater. Did 5 years of doing musicals and then went to school and then did off-Broadway. And And then did stand-up, which is also, in sketch comedy, which is, and I think that what's great about that is that, you learn to adapt when something isn't going well, and you really listen to the audience, and you're like, oh, that didn't go well, or you have an opportunity every night, Groundhog Day, to kind of like, that didn't quite work last night, let's figure out what works about it tonight, so... You have that ability to, you really have to think on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
But I prefer, for me, working in films, when I transitioned from doing, I literally was doing a play, this play called Black Eagles, and we were touring, and we were at the Manhattan Theater Club, which is a beautiful off-Broadway theater in New York. I was doing Cape Fear at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So... I was doing, once I started doing movies, and that was like the biggest part I'd had to date. I was like, oh, movies are, this is great. Like, this is, it seems so much less stressful. You go to the set and you have all day to work on a scene. Whereas, a theater piece is really, you're out there and you got 2 hours, and if a scene doesn't go well, that's one of the hardest things, is you're 3 scenes later and you're still killing yourself why something didn't go well, or you're thinking the whole time. It's a work in progress. You really have to carry everyone. You go, oh, okay, he's off tonight. Whoa, he's having a good show.
Mm-hmm.
And really get your stamina up to a 10, highly concentrated. Whereas movies are, you're only ramped up at a 10 for these little short bursts.
But over the course of, you've mentioned that, I think it was the Cape Fear scene that you said was a 17-hour day, right? One of those big scenes.
Stamina. But again, you're waiting, and then you have called to perform.
So it's not concentrated all at once.
No, then you go back to your trailer, they relight, you go back up, And some people prefer theater. I found years later, after having not done theater and then going back and doing...
Yeah.
A play at Playwrights Horizon, I had a very tough time. I was very undisciplined. I wanted to ad lib, and I'm like, wait, it's not like a TV show. We don't get to make up our lines or do, it was challenging, to stay focused and be in character. I got very bored very quickly.
So did you not, when you're doing film work, do you miss that feedback of an audience of the other elements that are there?
It's so funny, because growing up, all I cared about, musical theater was my life. I wanted to be Liza Minnelli. I just thought musical theater and theater was the way to go. That's all I cared about. That's, all my grandfather thought was important. And it was amazing how once I slipped into doing films, I was like, theater. I love watching theater,
mm-hmm.
but even I'm shocked. My roommate and I, we'd go to see the Broadway shows. If we couldn't afford it, we'd second act it.
Mm-hmm.
We had to see every show. We had the paper, and we'd cross out every Broadway play. And it became, not as important once I started, once I got involved in film,
mm-hmm.
I just started to really prefer doing film. I love to go see plays, and I would love to do a play, but if I had my choice, would you rather do a play or a movie? I'd movie, hands down.
Okay.
The experience of doing a movie, I just think it satisfies every romantic, notion I've ever had, and it's permanent. It's there, whereas that's that elusive quality of theater where... You have one night is great, and then you have another night that's terrible, or somebody's out there, and my God, that pressure of we would have people scouting for a television show, and you'd have an off night or something wouldn't go well, and God, there's nothing like the that dread of when a play doesn't go well. I learned a lot doing stand-up. And sketch comedy, again, about the audience. And I'm very fine-tuned. In fact, when I was in acting school, I would often get yelled at for, you're not in the scene. You're because the audience would laugh, and they'd say, oh, you're performing for the audience. And I'd be like, Yeah, I am.
That's who's watching.
That's a good thing. And I'm very attuned, even when I'm doing a movie, I'm attuned to everything. What is she wearing? What does the set look like? You know, sometimes I get like, why don't you mind your own business and just do your own thing? But I'm very much aware of the whole picture. And that could be because of the experience of doing stage work. It
sure,
could be.
Sure.
Because those are all my early
influences.
Yeah, my mm-hmm. early, you know. But listen, when I was a kid doing On the Town, it was crazy. I mean, we would have standing ovations in the middle of the show. Because we were kids and we were doing the show and people were astonished. Like, how are they doing these? They're just kids. Mm-hmm. You know, we learned these numbers and we killed ourselves. And in many ways, I would have to say those were the greatest theatrical experiences I ever had. I will never be able to top those experiences. I'll never get an audience to stand in the middle of a show. Can you imagine?
Right.
So that has stayed with me. Mm-hmm. You know, in comedy, I love getting a great laugh, like on stand up or reading or something like that. But a play is sometimes, you know, you're at the mercy of the audience and they come in and they're rustling and they.
Phones ring
and they're having an off night and, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Challenge.
All right.
Well, I'll be curious to see what Mary says.
Yeah.
She's a seasoned performer.
Comedian. Let's bring her on, shall
Alrighty,
we?
I'm going to talk.
She's Skyping in. So in other shows, yes. When we've had our guests, we've had them in the studio. But Mary's on the other coast today. So she's joining us via Skype.
She's shooting a pilot in New York that Will Ferrell is producing, which is
nice.
Pretty exciting. But you may know her from her role in The Descendants, or as Deputy Teresha Kimball on Reno 911. She was recently Hugh Hefner's secretary on Masters of Sex.
Oh, nice.
That was a pretty saucy role. Please welcome Mary Birdsong.
Yay!
You look like Santa's helper.
Hello!
Hi, Mary.
Hi. This is weird because you can see me, but I can't see you.
Right.
Yes. You know, when I did, they do what they call satellite interviews. And I've done those, and they're very challenging because and you do like 100 in a day, and you're like, you're on with Cincinnati, and they can't.
Well, you look good, Mary, and we look good too. I'm just gonna say,
where are you? Are you in a hotel?
I'm in this fantastic Airbnb.
Okay.
That is, I want to advertise it for him, but I don't know if he'll get in trouble, so I'm not gonna say.
Okay, yeah.
But it's just designed so beautifully.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's pretty awesome. But yeah, I'm Airbnb-ing it. And I just got in, and he was like, he just knocked on the door like, oh, you have to turn the TV on manually. I'm like, I'm doing a podcast.
Sir.
No respect.
So, Mary, we were just talking about the idea of having, you know, what are the differences for you between doing stage and film, television,
film.
Performances.
Oh, you mean like pictures?
Yeah.
The pictures.
Motion pictures.
The talkies.
I almost want to just listen to you talk because I get why people love this podcast because you're just so entertaining.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
We talk
and
movies.
Yes, I am a well-seasoned performer.
Yeah. You are. We performed together.
We did.
That was kind of my fantasy because the whole, yeah, I used to
on.
Do, we do a show called The Living Room Show. We perform a live variety in a complete stranger's living room in exchange for food. They, it's true. Mary did
it's
it.
It's back to like medieval times, right?
Yeah.
Like when people would just wander around and be like, feed me and I'll sing you a song.
Yes.
I love it.
But it also harkens back to the days of, you know, Judy Garland sitting around a piano at Gene Kelly's house and performing. And Mary, of course, does.
Oh, yes.
Judy Garland. So, and she brought the house down. We were at this, the Dolby Mansion. It was like the son of the heir to the Dolby stereo fortune.
Wow.
And very highfalutin house. We performed in some really great houses.
I'm sure you have.
But it went over really well.
Wow.
That was really fun. And you were very funny.
Thank you.
Yes.
But we again.
And,
Sorry.
So the film and stage thing.
Yeah. Yes.
I agreed with a lot. I think in general, like, I love the immediate feedback of performing on stage, and I love the, like, like, I feel like in film, the danger is I'm allowed to think more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And that's never a good thing with me. 'Cause I almost feel like when I'm good, I don't know why I'm good. Like, it's because I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, probably not typical, but I feel like when I'm going from impulse or instinct or just kind of letting something happen through me, it's usually like 9 times out of 10, a better choice than if I'm like, when I say this line, I'm going to do this, you know,
yes,
that's just bad news bears. So, and I come from also when I say stage, like I come from improv and sketch background, like you were talking about doing stand up and sketch comedy. And so that it's always so intense. You barely know like what performing space you're in. You know, you can barely fit on the stage. You got to like figure out where to put your wig. Like there's so much to distract you from being nervous or neurotic about it or over planning very much. Like, can we just pull this off? Not like, can we make this good, but can we just do this at all? And I love that sort of like guerrilla style, whatever, performing. And you have, even if it's shitty, at least you have control over it to a certain extent. Like, it's just you and the audience, like, especially with stand-up.
And you got to get yourself out of a jam sometimes. You know, when things, I mean, I think one of the toughest things is the stamina. When I did stand-up, I never was one of those people who yelled at the audience because I came from an acting background. Like, you never broke character. My character was a comedian. So I just...
And also, you're a woman. Like, it's, I just think it's much more unusual for a woman to blame the audience. I worked as a waitress in stand-up clubs for years, and by and large, like, if a guy tanked and he got off stage, she'd be like, what the fuck is their problem? And a woman would always, if she had that experience, she'd be like, I suck. What's wrong with me? You know, I was like, what a shocker.
Summing the sexes up in one experience right there. I think that's it.
Sorry, men. Mm-hmm. No, it's, and I'm sure there are exceptions, but.
Of course.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, or you're on to something, because I remember the night when you were performing and doing the Judy Garland, you don't even know what you're doing, and they start screaming, and you're like, you can't tweak it, or you just have to kind of go with it, you know?
Right. Whatever happens, just kind of respond to it in character and keep going. And I also live for that. Like, I love, like, when you were talking about kind of going a little batty, doing the same thing over and over again, like, I too, like, because my background is improv, like, we were encouraged to make up lines. Like, we were writing on the feet. And even when I finally got to Broadway, my first Broadway show was with Martin Short. And he is the worst culprit of all of, like, making lines up or trying to break people, you know, make people break into laughing. He would just live to, like, make us crack up.
Yes.
And try and mess us up. And, like, there'd be people in the wings, like, Brooks Ashmanskas, like, taking his pants down and showing us his penis, like, in the middle of a, you know, song. And
great.
And
that's where we got into show business.
Yeah.
To have those kind of moments.
So then when I remember, like, then I did Hairspray after that, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Am I? Like, Mrs. Crab? I don't have to do that. And they're like, yeah, you do. And I was like, that's not funny. Like, I was just like, and I didn't say that, you know, point blank, but I was like, I don't know. I find it really frustrating, the whole notion of like commercial theater, that it's frozen at a certain point.
Yes.
That you can't try and make it better if you want to. You know, otherwise it's just a machine. It's film. It's, you know, what's the point of doing something that's live if you can't adjust it, or I don't know.
Well, I think it's especially when you're funny, you know, and sometimes things die and you're like, all right, when I go to the desk, it's dying. So I got to try something
and you
new.
Know it. And when you know when you know there are options to make it better, it's like, I know the operation to make your heart pump blood. why are you making me give you this other operation that doesn't work?
Like, right.
So that's so painful to know that you can fix it and like have people hating you when you know you could have them laughing.
Yes.
So yeah, I have a hard time with the repetition and the, you know, over and over and over again. I think any longer than like 3 months in a play,
It's lethal.
I'm just praying for shit to fall apart or fall down. I remember I did this like Elaine May off-Broadway play with your friend Jeannie Berlin.
Oh, the best.
The best.
We love Jeannie Berlin.
Yes. Now she's on that big show.
I know, the big HBO show. Which I can never remember the title.
Into the Night?
I think that's it. That Night or, oh God.
That's
it's a wonderful show with John Turturro, and we can't think of the name of it.
But we were in the Night Of.
Thank you, John. I knew you.
Thank you, John. Sorry.
So we were in the play, and I remember one night I was in the middle of a scene, and I was just like, somebody just kill me right now. I'm just so bored with myself. And this big, huge potted plant that was in my character's apartment just fell over in the middle of a scene. And, you know, and I don't know what I said. I said something like, oh, I guess I should water it more or something like that. Like, probably wasn't that, but I was just like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. Or something new happened.
But, yeah.
What was that like working with Elaine May? I mean.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was so great. I'm putting my hat back on. I like myself better with my hat on.
You do?
Yeah.
You have such a...
It's like we don't get the chance to wear this stuff in L.A. That's why I wanted to wear it.
No, exactly.
It's to be like, it's winter!
Didn't Elizabeth Taylor have a hat like that in Ash Wednesday? There's any Wednesday? I feel like it's probably. A Elizabeth Taylor.
It does look very glamorous on you.
Yeah, it does. You just,
I feel like I'm doing the podcast from a ski lodge.
Yes, indeed. You need a hot toddy.
Give me some hot cider.
Uh-huh. we always start the show off by asking people. We're doing that a little later into the broadcast.
Right.
But by asking people if they remember the first film that they ever saw. Do you remember the first movie you saw?
I just was watching the Wayne Fetterman mm-hmm. podcast, and I heard you guys talking about that on the podcast. So I was like, oh, what was it? And at first I thought it was Poseidon Adventure. No. Then I thought it was Alien.
Oh.
Not true. And then I realized it was Pippi Longstocking.
Oh.
Nice.
Perfect.
On a field trip.
Pippi.
Perfect. So field trip.
What school takes kids to the movies on a field trip? How great is that? And I remember this little boy, I can't remember his name, but he cried. And so then he got really embarrassed because people were making fun of him because he cried and he got afraid. And then I think he peed his pants.
Aww.
That's to me.
And now we're married.
Yeah. See, that's a great movie-going experience. He hit all the emotions.
Yes, he did.
I laughed. I cried. I peed.
So I love that idea. Pippi Longstocking was great. I read all the books. I was really, she was great.
Crazy Swede.
And I remember being like scared. Like, I'm sure if I watched it now, it would be kind of creepy and scary in the 1970s way.
It is. Absolutely. For sure.
Just with her whole look and...
She used to be very mischievous in kind of a mean way.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
I think she was kind of like Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer.
Yeah.
But a girl. I don't know. I just remember it being sort of dark.
Yes.
Yeah, we were in a movie theater, Mary.
And I love that it was on a field trip. Well, it's so...
So that's the thing that made you want to become an actor, right?
I guess so. I wanted to make little boys pee their pants.
we've got it all covered. And then, you said you saw what was seeing the Poseidon Adventure like?
Oh.
I mean, that's like it was a grown-up movie.
Huh?
That was like a real grown-up movie with big stars. That would be the kind of movie my grandmother would take me to, you know, at Radio City. Like when I'd get a special.
I can't remember where we were. I don't know what year it came out. I remember I was young. But I remember there being like lines around the block.
Mm-hmm.
And even if there weren't lines on the block that night, that's how I remember it. Or I remember hearing about it. And to me, that was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible. This is important. And and I almost felt like we were going to see the actual movie stars there.
Yeah.
Which we weren't. But I was obsessed with the song when the girl sings,
There's got to be a morning after.
I would not stop singing that song. I sang it all around the house. I still sing it.
Me too.
It won the Academy Award. Did you know that
it did?
Susan Blakely, is that what you said?
Won the Academy Award.
Yes, it did. Oh, I loved that song. I was obsessed with that
song
too,
McGovern.
Mary. Yeah.
Yes. I think she overdubbed, though.
Got it.
Oh, really?
Because didn't the girl who had, like, shorts that kept coming off, wasn't she the one who sang it?
Carol Lindley?
Oh, okay. Carol Lindley.
Carol Lindley.
Yeah.
So, Mary, my Carol Lindley story was that, oh my God, I was doing this terrible movie. You know, I said the script. It's awful. They want to pay you this amount of money. Okay, I'll do it.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
And I go to do it, and I'm in a scene with John C. McGinley. You know him, the actor? Anyway, there's an extra in the scene. An extra. Her job was like she was in the background. We're supposed to run through her house. He and I are married, and we were having a fight, and we run through her house in the Hollywood Hills. And the person they hired as an extra was Carol Lindley.
Oh.
No!
Yeah, it was really...
Oh.
It was really upsetting to me.
Oh, my God.
I know. It was a very sobering experience. Not that she's sad or that it was sad, but she was doing it to get her health insurance. Like, she needed, you know, she just needed...
She needed a couple more hours.
She needed a little bit of time to get her health insurance. And we talked. I said, oh, I'm such a fan of yours. And under the yum-yum tree.
That is horrifying.
I know. So sorry to be a downer. But Carol Lindley was in the movie. And, of course, Gene Hackman, you know, I think gives, like, he gives it. What was so great about Gene Hackman in The Towering Inferno is that he gives it a gravitas, you know. That
he does. It's like, well, Gene Hackman's in it.
Yeah.
So this is respectable. I can like this.
Yeah. It holds up.
And he was like, he played like the cool priest, right?
Yeah.
In Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah. The hip priest.
Yeah.
Like a groovy priest.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you kind of wanted him and Carol Lindley to get together.
Totally. But you knew. Yeah.
He's a priest.
You knew they
were.
And weren't.
Everybody's going to die.
But
or
he
not.
Was really great.
Or not.
Ernest Borgnine, Shelley Winters. Red Buttons. Who also won the Academy Award, didn't he?
I just did a musical, you've probably heard of it, Seth Rudetsky and Jack Plotnick wrote it called Disaster.
Uh-huh. Jack Plotnick
sort of
from...
a pastiche of all of those.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
They were fun. But Towering Inferno is the first and the best, I think.
Yeah?
Oh, my God.
The Towering Inferno is pretty good, too, but...
I love Disaster. I'm good in a crisis, so I love Disasters.
Okay.
we sang the theme to Poseidon Adventure on the cruise last year. We did a salute because of the Living Room show. They were fans of the Living Room show, so we organized a sing-along. We did Oscar winning songs, and we did that one. But that's a great song that holds
up.
It is a great song.
It's, you know, there's that one. There's, you know,
there's got to be morning after. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, it's a good song to sing when you're a kid. You can
it
feel
is.
Like.
Oh, it's a cruise.
Right
out. Oh, no, true. Not on a cruise. Yeah. You're singing the theme to the Poseidon Adventure on a cruise.
I will not go on a cruise.
How come? I'm so pro cruise. I've been on 4 cruises.
I am so. And I grew up on the ocean. I grew up on a beach. Like.
What beach?
Where did you Long grow up? Beach Island, New Jersey, apparently.
Oh. From.
Yes.
We do research.
Which, you know, after Hurricane Sandy is like barely there. But the idea of a cruise.
Yeah.
Like that if something goes, and like there was this one year where it was like there were 3 cruises in a row where it was like people walking through shit on the, you know, Carnival Cruise Line. And,
right.
And it just, the idea of sinking or I think it's maybe it is Poseidon Adventure. Maybe
yeah.
It was just that like influence that I was like, hell no.
Well, I always have this theory that, you know, when you're young, your brain is wet cement. So these images that get in kind of become, you can't tell if they're real memories or.
Yeah, Jaws. I mean, I still, you know, and again, like, grew up swimming in the ocean where there aren't any sharks, like in the Northeast, you know, New Jersey.
Yeah.
But I still have that, like, no matter how illogical it is, I'm still like, well, but maybe.
No, I know that was.
So I have an equal but opposite illogic in that I grew up a swimmer, like competitive swimmer, and still do swim. And so I think if there's going to be a disaster, of course I'm going to be able to swim away from it. If a shark comes at me, of course I'm going to be able to, which is absolutely not logical either.
Right.
But it gives me my confidence. Of course I can take care of that. Well, not if you get hit over the head by a deck chair and are unconscious.
Yeah.
No, it'll be fine. I can swim.
I want to examine this fear of desk chairs. Or deck chairs. That would be a great disaster movie called Deck Chairs.
Deck Chairs. I have to say that when we were on the cruise, you feel very safe. Mm-hmm. They're like it's only late at night.
You do.
Well, no. When you go back to your room and you've had a few drinks, you realize that the whole outside, you know, you have a veranda and that's completely open. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that scares me. I go, you know, I could trip.
That's because you watch Dateline on Friday night sometimes.
Yeah, because I'm obsessed with Dateline.
Yeah.
So I would never bring anyone back to my room.
No, you know? Because you never know who might throw who else off of the veranda.
I know.
But
that
happens?
Gets me nervous. Like I'd fall off and that nobody would know. I have the worst fear, like, that nobody would care. They'd be like, how long? Be like, I knocked on Ileana's door. She's probably sleeping in. Forget it. And then it wouldn't. Like, how long would it take them to? That's my only thought. Not death or that my dog. I go, how long would
Just
it take
how,
them?
How much do they care?
Yeah, how much do they care?
Oh my gosh.
Well, that's like when I was a kid, I would run away. Did you ever run away as a kid? I would run away all the time.
You know, I don't think I did. I
oh
was
my
such
God.
A mama's girl. I was like running further inside. Like, I was such a sociophobe even then that I was like, that's the outside world is scary.
Well, so you would run away and no one would notice?
Yeah, I would. I used to run.
You know what I mean?
I would run away, and then there was like a pine forest. And I'd run away, and then I'd climb up on the tree, and then wait to hear them frantically looking for me, and they never would. So I would always be up in the tree, and my father would be saying something like, "It serves her right," you know, like it'll serve her right. You know, she should have something scary happen. That'll show her. And I'd be up in the tree going, thanks, Dad, once again. Mom. My mom would always want to go look for me, and my father would squelch it. I saw it in action. She wanted to be motherly.
No, he should have been out there with a flashlight and hound dogs.
No, I was. And then once I was up in the tree, and then once I heard my father, like, he'd convince my mother, like, you know, to teach me a lesson not to go look for me, that I'd dig in deep and I'd go find a neighbor and like go stay at the neighbor.
Nice. Just,
that would make me want to be like, oh yeah?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, good for me. Okay, I'm in Taiwan now, Dad.
Exactly.
I'm never ever gonna talk to you again.
Never coming back.
That's funny. Oh well. I showed them, but I would do the whole, you know, get the, like in a movie, you know, I always thought everything was like a movie. You get two steps, you know, and then of course your parents would come. Why would you think to come after you? And it would never happen. I remember like also being on the playground and we were playing soccer and one of the boys like, you know, shoved me or something. And I did one of these like, cause I saw it in a movie. I said, I've seen this a million times. Like I'm going to get all
and
these
it works
points
every time
where you're like, hey, you want to fight about it? And then the teacher goes, all right, now you two, come on, break it up. And I was like, you want to fight about it? And the kid goes, yeah, he just like punched me right in the eye. Boom. I landed on the ground, black eye. No one broke it up. No one, there was like, Ileana just threatened Danny, blah, blah, blah. You know, next thing we're both hauled off to the principal's office. I've got the black eye. She started it. He was the victim.
Nobody cared.
And once again, nobody cared. But what are you going to do? Yeah. Those were mine. Later on,
you still do that? Do you just like challenge grown men?
Oh, God. Well, that's like part of growing up on a commune, I think. And we were such social outcasts. I couldn't ride on the school bus because the school bus driver, I would get on the bus and he'd say, they open the door, you know, that thing. And he'd be sitting there. Yeah. And he would give me a dirty look. And I'd be like, oh, God. And I'd walk up those big steps. And then right as I was passing him, he'd go, dirty hippie.
Oh!
I know. So nice. It was like, I got a lot of Pocahontas because, like, we were hippies and I had the braids and stuff.
Did you, Ilion, did you get his license number and his tag number?
No, I didn't. That's why
I would like to talk to his supervisor.
Well, I did. I developed this lifelong thing. I don't like bullies. So I don't. I have a way over the top moral. It's to the point that it's literally irritates people. Like I've gone after people for like, that was very rude and why would you do that? And I've lectured people. I once lectured a guy who mugged me. It's like a famous story I've told. It's a true story. There used to be you've lived in New York. Do you remember when there used to be a Godfather Pizza in 42nd Street? Anyway.
I think so.
Many years ago, but I was there with my friend, and you know, we're having fun, kidding around. We're going to go see a play, and you know, this guy tried to steal my purse, and it was a miracle. I don't know how, but I lunged for him, and he had the purse up his sweatshirt, and I tackled him like as he was trying to go out the door. I literally tackled him, got him with one hand, got my purse back, and then started to lecture him that I only had $7. I was like, you were going to ruin my life for $7. And the guy was like trying to get out. Just
thank
like,
God he didn't have a weapon.
I know. I had a great, you know, moral thing.
Right. That was the Pizzagate of the 80s, like, sadly. That was
right.
That was as bad as it got back then.
So I'm curious about your stint on Masters of Sex.
Yeah. Who knows? Is she supposed to be potentially, you know, is that potentially recurring?
I know. They
carrot
always
they dangle in front of you. But,
I know they always say that.
But I just love anything vintage. So just yes. The fact that I got to wear vintage,
nice.
You know, cool dresses is great. And I got to kind of play, she's sort of like this Eve Arden in mm-hmm. the old movies. Eve Arden would always be like, let's go get a martini and talk about it. Like,
yeah.
You know? So she's, but she's, there's this real woman who was basically Hugh Hefner's like work wife.
Yeah.
Because they were together for like 50 years and she was this tough Irish lady who smoked. And so I played Hugh Hefner's personal secretary and I had these sort of pseudo like feminist discussions with oh my God, why am I blanking on her name? Because I love her.
Lizzie Kaplan.
Yes, I love Lizzie Kaplan. She was so much fun to work with, so down to earth, so funny. Like, she's another one that I feel like she's sort of part of the comedy.
Yeah, like, she has a comedy background. I remember her when she was more like a child.
Sketch world, and yet she's.
And now she's on a very serious.
So she's another one who's walking this line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was fun. Like, we got to sort of goof around in between takes. But again, like, I feel like when I'm doing TV, I let myself get a little bit intimidated and like we'll do like the fun stuff that I'll think of or whatever, like in between scenes. And then like,
right.
Yes, sir. Rolling, you know? So I wish I had a little bit more moxie as far as like, as my friend Caddy would say, swinging my dick.
I think it's, you know, as an actor these days, I feel you have to create it. You have to go on the set and just do it. Because especially a television show that is in a rhythm. Are we on 12? Are we on, this is episode 13. They got four more. And then, I don't know if it was your experience, but oftentimes now they're shooting multiple episodes at the same time. So like after you, they're shooting a scene from an episode that they did 2 weeks ago that they never got to. So it's a little, you know, they're so harried and it's very hard to come into a television show where everybody knows each other and kind of make your mark and stand your ground and like get your time on camera, you know? It's
yeah. I mean, and especially as a guest actor, yeah. because you haven't like built that trust with each other. Like, you know, if you were there from the start and
so what do you do when you walk on the set? Like, do you talk to everyone? I make a nuisance of myself. I literally walk on the set like I'm Jerry Lewis. Hi, everyone. How's everyone doing?
I hand out my business card.
I go, hi, everyone. Hey, how's it going? How are we all feeling?
I know. I'm much more like,
oh, that's so funny.
I slip into, like, people tend to think I'm like, I'm a good time, like, party gal or something.
Uh-huh.
Or a bitch. And I'm just such a, like, a wussy, like, shy, sort of polite, you know, unless I know people, and then I'm just filthy. Mm-hmm. So I tend to
you cut out just a little bit on that last statement you made. What was it again?
Oh, sorry. I tend to lay back a little bit and sort of take the temperature of the room until I feel like I've sort of, you know, is this a safe place to kind of goof around? It's just hard to know, you know?
Yeah. It's very hard, or whether you can ad lib or not. I did a stint on Modern Family, and again, I there was that environment like they're under the gun, they're trying, you know, and there was all these things I wanted to do, and I just was like, I'm just gonna do them. I'm just gonna be like,
how'd it go?
I think, you know, then everybody jumped up like, that's great, do this, do that, you know, they added to it. So, but I feel like you have to have a thick skin. If somebody comes up to you and goes, you know what, don't do that. You go, you got it, you bet, sir. You know, but if you don't do it, then, like,
yeah, because if you ask,
oh, it's terrible. Yeah, you can't ever ask. You can't.
Bad idea. And yeah, so I do want to try and do a little bit more of that. Because
it's tough.
I do feel like what you were talking about with everybody's in such a rush, and it's so I almost feel like the technical aspects, not just time wise, but even creatively, it's like, are we just like slaves to a bunch of booms and clamps and white sheets? It just looks like, wait, who is this about? Like, it's all about this big fucking whiteboard. And I wish, like, I feel like maybe I'm wrong, but I hope that TV and film are, as they get older, because they're still so young when you think about it compared to theater, that they'll be less hung up on like, no, it has to look like an exact replica of a kitchen. Like, who cares?
I don't think so. We did an episode where we talked to Larry Karaszewski about film. I said, I love films from the 70s because it's like, guess what? Popeye Doyle's talking and an airplane goes by and he just talks louder, you know?
Yeah. Nobody cares. Like, we know it's fake, especially now. Like, audiences are so much smarter. And with stuff like YouTube and Vine, I feel like the next generation is less hung up on, like, production values because they're just doing shit out of their living room anyway.
Right. Yes.
And it's like, is it funny or not? Is the premise funny? Do you get out on time? Great, you know? And, yeah, I just feel like it's so precious and, like, it's like you're performing neurosurgery instead of, like, making comedy and goofing around and, like, taking risks and fuck you, film and TV people. I don't know why I'm so angry at film and TV.
No, you sometimes, again, like, as I said, I just feel like you have to make a statement when you go on the set and set a tone for, yeah, I'm not going to waste your time, but I'm going to take time to make this better, to, you know, create something.
Yeah.
It's the whole reason we, you know, we got in, because to me, there's nothing worse. I always think the worst thing is to be home and just go, God damn it, why didn't I do?
Right.
Why didn't I ask for one more take? Or that, in a weird way, that's worse. Because if something goes well, everybody's patting you on the back and, you know, and is glad you did it. It is hard because the technical aspects currently really take over, I'd say, 50 or 60% of what you're doing. The actors, you know, we never rehearse. And oftentimes, you know, again, you're like, I haven't rehearsed this. I love when they go, have you ever had this experience where they go, she's walking out the door and you hear someone, like, you're in the scene and you'll hear, like, the DP, who you don't know because you're guesting on a show. Why is she doing that? Why is she walking over at the set? And you go, I actually don't we never rehearsed this, and now you're bad-mouthing me in front of everyone. I've had that happen numerous times. She's going over there, and there's no light there. What is she? Why is she doing that? I'm like, because we actually never rehearsed it. We're shooting it right now.
So. Right. And even rehearsing is basically like, when I think of rehearsal, like in a stage world, it's like, well, let's talk about this relationship and,
yeah,
you know, what does she want in this, blah, 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 what does this mean? And you know, in TV, it's like, rehearsal is like, so you walk to the counter. Like, wow, that's heavy, man. You sure to the counter? Wow, that, I never thought of that. That is genius.
Is there a bowl of nuts on the counter, though? Is that the big question?
Is there a bowl of nuts?
Mary, when you're shooting a pilot right now. That's what you're doing in New York right now. Yes?
Yes. I actually haven't shot it yet. I shoot on the 8th. So I have a fitting tomorrow, but I just landed this morning here in New York.
That's exciting.
So you're getting to originate this role. So, you know, and hopefully, God willing, you know, it'll go on for a very long time. So let's talk about that experience of starting a new role for television in a series that, you know, could potentially live for a long time.
Yeah, I'm excited. And it's actually really good that I'm doing this podcast because, Liana, you're saying things that I need to remember. But yeah, like...
Mary Birdsong was fired. No, I'm kidding. It's not even a funny
joke.
And
then I'll start a podcast called I Blame Iliana.
Exactly.
No, you're going to do great. You have to get, an actor has to get what you want. You have to negotiate. Not in a way like you're a pain in the ass, but just
And I think like the director is Adam McKay. I can never remember how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, Adam McKay.
But funny, smart guy. Yeah. Like, so I'm not worried really at all.
Yeah.
Because and I don't care. Like, give me a line reading. I have no problem getting line readings as long as it is funny or funnier than something I would have thought of. If it's better, it's better. I'll take a line reading from a janitor. I don't care. But what I hate is when somebody who is just not good at so it's a
sorry,
it's
Mary. Really you cut out again. You cut out again. So what you really can't stand is.
When you have to kind of take direction, like in theater, I've had to take direction from a stage manager who was a great stage manager, but not necessarily, you know, a comic savant, you know?
Right.
And it's just, it's frustrating when they're like, hey, you know, it'll make this really funny. If you say the word cheese on the third beat, you'll get your laugh. You'll get your laugh is gross.
Yeah.
It's gross to hear that. But yes, originating a character is one of my favorite things to do. And it'll be interesting because like on Reno. Oh, did I cut out again?
No, that was me interrupting you.
Oh,
you were going to say on Reno.
But I just remember like, had I known when I started doing Reno 911, and the good news is you'll hopefully be able to keep doing this, you know, like I remember Tom Lennon always talking about like he probably wouldn't have chosen the shorts.
Right,
that's great. Yeah. That's so funny. Now,
you know,
speaking
so be careful. You know,
speaking of shorts, so when you go do the fitting, is that where the character are clothes important to you?
Oh yes, but I mean in this instance, like in the pilot episode, I'm only in one scene, and I get woken up, mm-hmm. awakened mm-hmm. out of bed in the middle of the night.
Right.
Under the cover. So, you know, I'll be like, I want to wear a turban. And I want curlers.
Yeah.
But I loved what you were saying about the perm, like you were trying to sneak a special hairdo or something in. And you're like, what?
Oh, that was fun. I was so proud of myself. I have my movie within a movie trying to get Barbara Streisand in there. Allison was like, go, turn around now. Go back to the trailer. This is not a Barbara Streisand movie. But to me, I'm like, it's got to be fun for me and my friends. We can point at, you know. But see, as soon as you said that with the bed, I'm always thinking, Like, well, but you never know. See, Mary, you could get there and they go, you know what? We thought about it and we're scrapping the bed idea. And we're thinking that maybe you're in the bathroom brushing your teeth. You know, and these things happen all the time.
This happened to me. I was in a movie. I think it was called High School. otherwise known as Medical Uses School. I was in this movie, High School, and I was supposed to be, I think, in like a bedroom. Yeah, I was like almost like a Mrs. Robinson sort of character in a bedroom with like a long robe on. And this high school kid is in my bedroom. Fair enough. I show up the night before and it's late. It's like 11 o'clock at night and I have to shoot early the next morning. A script gets slid under my door and all of a sudden I'm like an Olympic level swimmer doing swimming stunts. And in the shower in a bathing suit.
Oh.
And I was probably like 40 at the time. Like, okay. But like I'm no Cheryl Teagues, okay?
Yes, well said.
I like to keep it topical. And I'm like, so wait a minute. You're going to have a camera closing in on my ass in a bathing suit in the shower. And like I'm supposed to do swimming stunts?
Doesn't even make sense.
Luckily, they did have like, I guess, a swim double. But nobody told me that. I just get this script saying... So, you know, but that's exciting. Okay.
Going back to your negotiating comment, right?
Gotta negotiate. Yeah, you know, I always do the, what
totally
do you do?
Totally going to look for that on YouTube.
I do the, oh my God, this is so funny. This new bathing suit idea is so great. You know, I'm thinking, you fake them out.
Yeah.
And then you just veer.
Redirect to whatever you want them to do, yeah?
You veer in some other crazy direction.
Yes, that is brilliant, too. And that's something I need to get better at.
Oh, my God. Then you go, you know, the only thing that concerns me is, like, with the water. What if we have to go back and redub this entire scene? Isn't that going to be a problem? And suddenly they're like, you know, she's got a point there. That's a good point. You know what? Let's grab the shower. Let's have her back in bed.
Yes! Win!
See, I think I would go with, like, here's the thing. I have I have that werewolf syndrome on my back of my butt. Yeah.
That's a good one too. Oh my God.
Which is fine. I just don't know if that's going to fit like your vision of what she is.
Yeah. So you'll do the fitting, which, you know, you'll come up with your costume, whatever. Now then when you get to the set, to me, the performance begins. I literally begin it once I go to the set. The minute I get out of my car and step into the makeup trailer, I am acting. I am
really?
I am no longer Ileana Douglas. I'm like, hi, good morning. Who wants to hear some music?
Oh, that, yes. I thought you were saying that you were like in character.
In character, no, in the makeup
right,
trailer.
Right, right. Well, I'm in character.
I'm not myself right now. I'm acting right now.
You're brilliant.
If I were myself right now, I would be in sweatpants watching the Smithsonian Channel, probably.
Because they're, you know how it is. You get there and they turn around. They're all the way. They're wearing their jackets. Hi, have a seat. I'll be there in a minute. You want any coffee? You know, you're like, oh, life is so horrible, isn't it? We're doing a movie. It's like, how could you be so depressed? So I always feel like I'm like, they're going to bring me down. So I got to come with.
Setting the tone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And my thing, too, is like, it's both. I'm going to entertain you and make you adore me.
Yes.
By 8 a.m. No, probably by 7. But also I'm going to make you think, wow, what a salt of the earth kind of no funny business, no high maintenance girl.
Yeah.
Like, I will be like, do you want me to put the makeup on myself? I'll do that. I don't care. You look tired. Do you want to sit down? Like, I'm just... oh, it's okay. Don't buy... It's okay. I don't need makeup. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, just like... So, yeah.
I had that.
I'm not one of those people who's like, no, I need a lipstick.
I know.
That is two shades darker than, you know.
But I look at people like that and I always admire them, but I wouldn't have the guts to do that in a million years. Like, I would rather go to my room, which I have often done, and just said, yeah, this is horrible. I'm rubbing all of this off. I have got way too much makeup on. I told her no contouring. What is she doing? You know, then say, they go, do you like it? And I'm like, it's fantastic. Yeah. And I just leave. I mean, what have you done? Go all Faye Dunaway. What have you done to my face?
I'll be afraid I'll get in trouble.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, I'm, you know.
So I'm a drag queen instead. Says the woman in the fuzzy hat.
I'm feeling it's going to be great. You're going to have a wonderful time. You'll have good stories after you shoot, you know.
Very excited. And it's not like the script is very funny, but very dark.
Uh-huh.
Like it's not like Anchorman, Step Brothers sort of,
right,
you know, broad stuff like that. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
And do you have scenes with Will Ferrell?
I don't know if he's in it. Is he in it? You know, I don't know. Oh. But I only have a scene. My only scene is on the phone with my son.
Oh, I see.
So I play this kind of Lady Macbeth,
yeah,
like poor relation.
Mm-hmm.
And Mama Rose, kind of like, you get in there, you know.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
And in the audition tape, I had to put myself on tape, and my boyfriend helped me because he's a director. And my cat accidentally came into the shot.
Oh, that's great.
And it worked perfectly. So I'm wondering if they'll give me a cat. That would be great.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. Having an animal, yeah. Although multiple takes would be.
Indeed.
Would be kind of, you know, kind of tough.
Yeah, there I go. Yeah, that's true.
Well, Mary, this sounds great. This is amazing. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
But there's one thing, though. Yeah. We've been talking about, and we're told about the Judy Garland impression.
Yeah.
Would you give us a little? Or Liza, you do them both, from what I heard.
Oh, but I don't do very good Liza, you see, because Liza's a marvelous. She's got a something that I don't have. God damn it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not Liza. I'm Judy. I love you.
Mary, did you see Judy Garland in a terrible movie called I Could Go On Singing?
I could go on singing till the cows came home.
You did it. That's just what I wanted.
I'm not going to be rolled out like some piece of pastry where people can keep taking bites of me.
You know, she...
I sing for myself.
Okay.
Myself alone.
You know, she improvised, you know, most of the movie. These were her words.
You can see Dirk Bogarde, her scene partner, like, yes.
Yes.
Yes, and you need to do that. He's like terrified.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Mary. I know. I'm fascinated. There's a scene with him. He's like, his eyes are going, like he's just trying to find some point of reference where he can get one of his lines in while Judy relives her MGM days.
Oh my God.
He's like looking for the strap on the subway car. Yes. Like a pinch of coal.
Oh my God! I could go on singing.
One plug. So gonna go look for it.
More Judy.
Yeah.
Or more other characters. I'm doing this 365 characters in 365 days thing on YouTube.
I saw that on your website.
So I encourage your podcast people.
Absolutely.
To go see it.
Your website's marybirdsong.com, and you're on Twitter at marybirdsong as well.
Yeah, the website's so out of. It needs to be updated,
but your stuff's still there. I mean, we can get connected to all of you there.
Yes.
So we can definitely.
And YouTube, it's Mary Birdsong YouTube.
Nice.
So
nice.
The very funny, the very talented Mary Birdsong.
Yes, thank you for being with
thank
us.
Thank you for being
also,
with us.
Also, you guys, you can buy Ileana's book out on paperback now at Amazon and at bookstores. It's a great read. You should buy it. Like our page on Facebook. And you can check out our website, ilianaspodcast.com.
That's right. And like we always say, Mary, everyone's life is a movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end. This is the end of our show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. And thanks, Mary.
Have fun in New York.
Bye.
Bye. I could go on singing. That was funny.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.